Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Reagan Revolution, A Very Short Introduction by Gil Troy. Narrated by Jeremy Gage.
Preface. They called it the Reagan Revolution, Ronald Reagan noted in his farewell address. Well, I'll accept that. But for me, it always seemed more like the Great Rediscovery. A rediscovery of our values and our common sense. Today, more than two decades after that 1989 speech, debate continues over just how revolutionary those Reagan years were. While most conservatives reject any criticism of their hero, an articulate minority laments that he did not go far enough. And while some liberals mourn just how much Reagan changed and ruined America, others mock him as a disengaged, do-nothing dunce. Nevertheless, Reagan's legacy continues to shape American politics, diplomacy, culture, and economics. Presidents Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama all looked to Reagan's model of presidential leadership. On Monday, January 14, 2008, in Reno, Nevada, during the Democratic primary campaign, Obama said that Reagan changed the trajectory of America in a way that Richard Nixon did not, and in a way that Bill Clinton did not. Meanwhile, many of the 1980s debates about the budget, tax cutting, defense spending, and American values persist. Love him or hate him, Ronald Reagan remains the most influential president since Franklin D. Roosevelt. In May 2007, the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California, hosted the first debate for the 10 Republicans running for president in 2008. The moderator, Chris Matthews, opened the debate by noting that a recent poll had found that only 22% of respondents believed this country is on the right track. Matthews then asked the candidates, "How do we get back to Ronald Reagan's Morning in America?" 8 months later, Senator Barack Obama complimented Reagan, prompting a fierce reaction from his primary rival, Senator Hillary Clinton, who treated Obama's respect for Reagan's leadership style as endorsements of Reagan's program. More than a quarter of a century after Ronald Reagan's 1981 inauguration, more than a decade after he withdrew from public view, and years after his death, Ronald Reagan seemed to be one of America's most popular politicians. In the 1980s, Chris Matthews was a former speechwriter for President Jimmy Carter, whom Reagan defeated for the presidency, working for Ronald Reagan's new nemesis, Speaker of the House Thomas Tip O'Neill. That Matthews, speaking in shorthand, could invoke Ronald Reagan's 1984 re-election slogan as a political gold standard was incredible. Even more extraordinary was how frequently the Republican candidates mentioned Reagan during the campaign, virtually ignoring the unpopular Republican incumbent George W. Bush and Reagan's oft-neglected immediate successor, President George H.W. Bush. George W. Bush had experienced his own turnaround regarding Reagan. The intensely competitive Junior Bush supported his father, George H.W. Bush, during the bitter 1980 contest for the Republican nomination, which Reagan won. The younger Bush then smoldered as both his parents suffered various slights from 1981 through 1989 during the elder Bush's tenure as Reagan's vice president. By January 1989, the new president, George H.W. Bush, distanced himself from his predecessor as Ronald Reagan retired to California. Bush emphasized that he was the real Reagan, with a model family, true heroics during World War II, and a regular habit of attending church, not just talking about it. Bush also emphasized that he was a hands-on chief executive, implying that Reagan was lazy and sloppy. The discussion in the Bush White House about Reagan became so contemptuous that former President Richard Nixon chided Bush's chief of staff, John Sununu. President Bush quickly phoned President Reagan to apologize. Throughout the early 1990s, Ronald Reagan's historical stock plummeted. More people seemed to remember his gaffes, not his gains, his losses, not his wins. Debacles including the Iran-Contra scandal, $200 billion worth of savings and loan bankruptcies, and the $2.8 trillion budget deficit by 1989 tainted Reagan's legacy. Popular perceptions of Ronald Reagan focused on his hands-off, seemingly negligent management style. His buffoonish reliance on an astrologer for scheduling, his preference for sweeping rhetoric over constructive action. Ronald Reagan risked becoming a punchline, the rigid ideologue who thought trees caused more air pollution than cars, the aging leader who snoozed when meeting the Pope, and once greeted his only African-American cabinet member at a conference of mayors as Mr. Mayor. When Bill Clinton, a young, relatively unknown Arkansas governor, launched a long-shot bid for the presidency in 1991, he and his wife, Hillary Rodham, condemned the greed, selfishness, and empty political postures of the glitzy, heartless Reaganite 1980s. Ironically, the Democratic victory in 1992 helped resurrect Ronald Reagan's historical reputation. Bill Clinton's presidency triggered nostalgia for Reagan's. The Democrats' embrace of the booming 1990s made it harder to criticize Reagan Republicans for championing the booming 1980s. Bill Clinton's moral sloppiness fed a yearning for an old-fashioned leader who never took off his suit jacket in the Oval Office. And the end of the Cold War loomed ever larger as an achievement, as the 1990s economic growth minimized the significance of the once formidable Reagan-era budget deficits. At the same time, Ronald Reagan's classy letter retiring from public life before Alzheimer's disease destroyed his mind, and Nancy Reagan's devotion to her ailing husband, boosted their popular and historical standing. As Ronald Reagan's memory faded, memories of his presidency became more vivid and positive. Increasingly, even those who had detested him began to respect him. Americans began realizing that he had been a consequential president, for better and worse. The release of Reagan's speeches from the 1970s and his presidential diaries showed he was no marionette. He had a quick wit, a silver tongue, and a sunny vision. Defining a taxpayer as someone who works for the federal government but doesn't have to take a civil service exam turned his harsh critique of big government into easy listening. Unlike his more thin-skinned successors, Reagan adeptly diffused criticism and puffed himself up with seemingly self-deprecating jibes. Swatting away attacks that he was old, lazy, and sleeping on the job, he insisted, "I have left orders to be awakened at any time in case of national emergency, even if I'm in a cabinet meeting." Reagan's revolution, restoration, and rediscovery continued to shape the country. Americans were living in a Reaganized America. America had emerged as the world's only superpower, enjoying a capitalist resurgence at home and abroad. Reagan's Sun Belt conservatism continued to shine, or cast a shadow, depending on one's perspective, in the courts, the Congress, and state capitals. In Washington, presidential power continued to grow, and congressional standing flagged, especially as Congress became more polarized. The Republican Party's liberal wing remained moribund, and conservatives dominated. The quest to restore America's values and soul persisted, as did the blurring of popular and political culture. Primetime television shows modeled themselves on White House life and created fictional presidents more popular than the actual incumbents, as stars such as California's Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and the comedian Al Franken followed Reagan's path from showbiz to politics. Meanwhile, presidents and their wives played the fame game like Hollywood celebrities. Simple, visionary doctrines, such as George W. Bush's war on terrorism and Barack Obama's Yes, We Can sloganeering, galvanized most Americans, at least momentarily, while alienating an articulate, passionate minority. The fall 2008 financial meltdown triggered intense arguments about the new economy rooted in Reagan's 1980s. Americans debated whether the economic crash originated with Reagan-tinged trends, such as the growth in service jobs rather than manufacturing, the conspicuous consumption, the ever more abstract financial instruments, the media fawning over moguls, the regulatory rollback, and the growing gap separating the richest from the poorest. Yet even as experts pronounced the end of an era, Americans continued battling over many of the issues that launched Reagan's career. Abortion. Affirmative action. Social Security. Taxes. Fortunately, the fights were tempered by the sentimental patriotism that he helped revive, as evidenced by America's resolve during the Gulf War, the country's unity in pain after September 11, the surge of enthusiasm in 2008 for Barack Obama's Siren Song of Hope, and the Reaganite glitz and kitsch that punctuated America's annual calendar, from Super Bowl Sunday in January to the mass Christmas shopping spree in December. With each passing year, it became clearer that Ronald Reagan's greatest achievement was in reviving and transforming American nationalism. Ronald Reagan was a romantic, aw-shucks, all-American patriot. His rise in politics was fueled by the backlash against the 60s countercultural radicalism and self-criticism, which degenerated into the 70s defeatism and pessimism. Reagan revived Americans' traditional self-confidence, restoring their optimism about their country's future. His unabashed, often teary-eyed and tear-inducing patriotism was choreographed by his handlers, but heartfelt on his part. His red, white, and blue technicolor nationalism suited the television age. Moreover, rather than rejecting many of the 60s' most important reforms, from civil rights to women's liberation, he helped mainstream them, producing what we can call the Reagan Reconciliation. Reagan's patriotism was guilt-free, a decadent nationalism soothing a consumerist superpower that lacked 19th-century America's thrift or humility and had lost faith in many mid-20th-century big government programs. With Ronald Reagan's mix of feel-good rhetoric and surprisingly cautious domestic policies, Americans could succumb to the broad appeal of a communal vision without inconveniencing themselves individually. Reagan found vindication in what we can call his three P's: patriotism, prosperity, and peace. The result was a revolution that, like life, was complex and occasionally paradoxical. It was more incremental than extensive, producing a conservatism that was more modern than revanchist, led by a nimble politician who was more moderate than fanatic, and more effective, but less dominant, than supporters hoped and opponents feared. Chapter 1. Was Reagan a dummy? Like heat-seeking missiles, the jibes mocking Ronald Reagan's intelligence pursued him as a president and still dog his historical reputation. The Washington wise man Clark Clifford dismissed Reagan as an amiable dunce. The historian Gary Wills called Reagan Mr. Magoo after the bumbling cartoon character who stumbled repeatedly because he stubbornly ignored his bad vision. Gary Trudeau's Doonesbury comic strips depicted Reagan's brain as unduly aggressive, minimally analytic, and overstuffed with images of an idyllic America, including 5-cent Cokes, Burma shave signs, and hard-working white people. These characterizations of Reagan the dummy are entertaining, but wrong. Ronald Reagan was a savvy, ambitious, idea-driven politician who frequently appeared unthreatening, naive, unintellectual, and apolitical. He had people smarts more than book smarts. He was more intuitive than analytical, more impressionistic than precise, more of a big-picture visionary than a rigorous detail man. But he loved facts and ideas, even if he occasionally twisted his storehouse of facts and anecdotes to serve his ideology and punctuate his parables. So, yes, the old Hollywood hand could tell the Prime Minister of Israel that he had visited the Nazi concentration camps when he had seen them on film. And he could frustrate aides and journalists with inaccurate claims about how many thousands of hours General Motors lawyers devoted to filling out government forms, or who was cheating as a welfare queen. But most Americans forgave these lapses as an enthusiast's exaggerations, rather than the fumbles of a fool. Reagan enjoyed being underestimated. During the campaign for California's governorship in 1966, the incumbent Edmund G. Pat Brown dismissed Reagan, a political rookie, as a mere actor. 14 years later, in the 1980 presidential race, the incumbent Jimmy Carter and most White House aides derided Reagan as a doddering fanatic. The American people are not going to elect a 70-year-old, right-wing, ex-movie actor to be president, Carter's right-hand man, Hamilton Jordan, sneered. Reagan won both elections. Ronald Reagan was a great political showman and an ideologue. Opponents consistently attacked him inconsistently, as both clueless and fanatic, leading many Americans to reject both slurs. Reagan's Hollywood celebrity and Mr. Nice Guy amiability smoothed his ideological rough edges. To meet Reagan, to listen to one of the many radio talks he gave during the 1970s, to hear the presidential addresses he delivered so effectively, was to realize that he was a man with a mission, a believer in a conservative revolution and the American dream. He redeemed Americans' faith in their own country as what the Puritan John Winthrop called the shining city upon a hill. Ronald Wilson Reagan's complicated, often misleading, lifelong game with the world stemmed from his experiences growing up in the Midwest, the region he fled in his 20s but deified his whole life. Born in a small apartment in Tampico, Illinois, population 820, on February 6, 1911, Reagan spent his childhood hiding from the ugly realities of life with an alcoholic shoe salesman father, Jack Reagan. "Our family didn't exactly come from the wrong side of the tracks," Reagan would claim, "but we were certainly always within sound of the train whistles." His mother, Nell Wilson Reagan, was a calmer, more reassuring presence, whose deep faith in the pacifist, individualistic Protestant Disciples of Christ denomination, today also known as the Christian Church, further set her son apart from his peers. Naturally charming, Reagan learned to pretend to be an insider, despite being an outsider. Like many of his contemporaries, he would remember being poor, but not really knowing it. But unlike many, he sought refuge in the conventional because of his unconventional upbringing, resulting in an individualist who outwardly appeared to be the ultimate conformist. His feelings of inadequacy, and fears of being exposed, fueled his ambition along with an appealing but idiosyncratic, romantic, self-dramatizing streak. Typically, he adjusted his name to fit his self-image, preferring the more red-blooded all-American nickname Dutch to Ronald. Bouncing around small-town northern Illinois in the 1910s and 1920s, tired of making new friends and embarrassed by his family's circumstances, young Reagan withdrew into his Victorian mother's world, the world of books. From his mother, Reagan also learned how to become some of the heroes he read about, if only temporarily. One night, Nell Reagan, had her youngest son deliver a short speech as part of a staged reading she organized in these days before movies, radio, and television saturated America. For an insecure, lonely child craving approval, the clapping and laughing proved addictive. After moving 5 times in less than a decade, the Reagans settled in Dixon, a town of 10,000, 100 miles west of Chicago, when Reagan was 9. One cold winter night, 2 years later, in 1922, Reagan found his father passed out in the snow near the front door. Reagan recalled wanting to leave his father outside. But, knowing his small town's prying eyes and wagging tongues, he feared the neighbors would hear his father's loud snoring and snicker, humiliating the entire family. Reluctantly, resentfully, he dragged his father inside and put him to bed. Following his family protocols, he never told his mother. Severe nearsightedness further insulated young Reagan. Not until he was 13 or 14 did he accidentally don his mother's glasses and discover that the world was not full of blurry blobs. Lost in his own world but sensitive to his surroundings, Dutch Reagan became a solitary people person. Despite being a loner, he learned how to charm a crowd. This paradox would lead to a Hollywood celebrity who was universally liked but never fully accepted. A Hollywood square with an independent streak, producing a president famous for being likable but surprisingly inaccessible. Even Nancy, his devoted wife, would compare him to a brick wall. Loving to be liked, Reagan pursued drama, sports, and student politics, three arenas where he could play the hero despite his family background. In 1926, the 15-year-old Reagan became a lifeguard. Further sensitizing Dutch to the dangers of being lulled by illusions, a lush, seemingly placid riverbend in Dixon's Lowell Park hid powerful undercurrents. Over the next 7 summers, Reagan saved 77 swimmers flailing in Rock River's deadly currents. He took great pride in that statistic, yet most of the swimmers resented his help. At home and in Lowell Park, Reagan learned that people hated to be saved. Dutch Reagan wavered between carefree optimism and deep despair. "I wonder what it's all about and why we suffer so when little things go wrong," he wrote in one high school poem. "We make our life a struggle when life should be a song." The optimism for which Ronald Reagan became famous was achieved at great effort and only by ignoring surrounding turmoil and internal anguish. Reagan attended Eureka College, a small, coeducational Disciples of Christ institution near home. Sustained by a needy student scholarship and odd jobs, Reagan thrived. Tall, charming, and handsome, the economics major was a BMOC, a big man on campus. He earned passable grades while winning letters in 3 sports and serving as basketball cheerleader, yearbook features editor, and student body president. "Going to college offered me the chance to play football for 4 more years," he would quip. Reagan also won a national acting contest. Knowing better than to admit such a fey ambition publicly, by senior year, Reagan secretly dreamed of becoming an actor. Reagan graduated from Eureka in 1932, with his optimism intact despite the Great Depression blighting America. "Oh, it was a small town, a small school with small doings," he would recall. "It was in a poor time without money, without ceremony, with pleasant thoughts of the past to balance fears of the uncertain future." He had learned to be an actor, on stage and on the street. He took pride in being a savior, whether people wanted it or not. And he delighted in being cheerful, understanding that people flocked to buoyant, confident types and did not want to hear about anybody's pain, no matter how lonely, embarrassed, marginal or forlorn they might feel. Eureka shaped Reagan socially and psychologically more than it defined him ideologically and intellectually. He emerged as a consummate gentleman, and a self-contained sort, apparently sunny and open, in fact, emotionally distant and closed. As Ronald Reagan entered the real world, his intellectual journey began in earnest. From the 1930s through the 1950s, he mastered the showmanship, developed the commitment of free enterprise, learned the love of liberty, and internalized the hatred of communism that would shape his presidency. Maturing in the 1930s, disappointed in his own father, Ronald Reagan worshipped President Franklin D. Roosevelt with a filial devotion. Reagan remained personally grateful that a New Deal program employed his father. More broadly, he saw how the president restored hope and moved the nation with fireside radio chats, inspiring speeches, bold programs, wit, and warmth. Like so many sons disappointed in their fathers, Reagan would spend his life collecting heroes. These heroes seized his imagination and sculpted his vision rather than filling the emotional void that remained. Reagan's devotion to Franklin Roosevelt was such that, in later years, he denounced the Democratic Party, big government, high taxes, the Great Society, the bureaucracy the New Deal created, but not FDR. Shortly after graduating college, Reagan became a radio sports announcer in Iowa, first in Davenport, then moving to Des Moines in April 1933. With the fluidity of a jazz maestro improvising riffs, Reagan brought to life curt, telegraphic wire service summaries of games. He secured the job by calling an imaginary football game on the air and making it sound compelling. Reagan combined his love of performance and his love of sports on this magic carpet of the imagination at $100 a month during the depth of the Depression. In 1937, while covering the Chicago Cubs' spring training camp in Southern California, the 26-year-old sports announcer took a screen test. His agent described him as a likable, clean-cut American type, especially appealing to young girls and older women. Warner Brothers Movie Studio offered him a 7-year, $200-a-week contract. Dutch Reagan packed his 1934 Nash Lafayette convertible coupe and moved west. Ronald Reagan quickly felt at home in the land of illusions. Hollywood's masters of make-believe restyled his hair, tailored his shirts to make his head and shoulders appear better proportioned, and sought a new name for Dutch Reagan. The new arrival sold his handlers on his real name. A good boy, without being a prig, Reagan lived modestly. He soon rented an apartment in West Hollywood for his mother and father, whom he would support for the rest of their lives. Reagan often accompanied his mother to church and supported her many charities. He was hard-working and reliable, far less extravagant and self-absorbed than most actors. "I'm a plain guy," he wrote in one movie magazine, still trying to conform. "I'm interested in politics and governmental problems. Mr. Norm is my alias, or shouldn't I admit it?" Reagan played the good guy, if not always the hero. In 53 films, from 1937 until 1964, he only played one villain. Starting, as most contract players did, with B-movies, he was soon calling himself the poor man's Errol Flynn. Handsome enough to be a swashbuckler, not quite charismatic enough to be a star. In 1938, Reagan met the beautiful blonde actress Jane Wyman. She was divorcing her first husband and far too saucy for a square like Reagan. Wyman first doubted that a man could have so even a disposition consistently. She soon learned this was the real Ronnie, optimistic, affable, dependable, honorable, and steady. Ronald Reagan and Jane Wyman married in 1940. Hollywood expected a fairy tale marriage. Reagan told his volatile, insecure bride.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?